by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in the country. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. And now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. Tonight we welcome five new stations to be elected. Can he serve honestly and be reelected? These are questions for Night Call guest Brooks Hayes, the ex-congressman from Arkansas. Mr. Hayes was defeated for his ninth term in Congress back in 1958 when he stuck to his convictions and worked to uphold the court order on school desegregation in Little Rock. Mr. Hayes is now chairman of SCOPE, which stands for Southern Committee on Political Ethics. SCOPE is a group seeking to educate politicians in and out of office. Mr. Hayes is standing by in Atlanta waiting for your questions. Later on in the program, we'll hear from special call-in guest Senator Tom Ratney. He's the Alabama state senator who just resigned from politics when his family was threatened. Before I give out our special Night Call numbers again, I would like to remind you that the sooner you call in with your questions or your comments, the better chance you have to get on the air with them. You may call us from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. You may call us from the West at area code 212-749-3357. That's area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area, we welcome your calls at 866-5010. That's 866-5010. Mr. Hayes, good evening, sir.
Hello.
And thank you. Thank you for being with us. Mr. Hayes, why is SCOPE just a Southern organization? Why not a group like this for the entire nation?
Well, first let me say, Mr. Shields, that we are not separatists. We're Southerners in the sense that we love our region, and many of the Southern traditions that are peculiar to the region are appealing to us. But we believe that whatever we do in accomplishing a more ethical Southern society should be shared with the rest of the nation. And most of us are experienced in political life. We're not politicians professionally. Some of us have had political careers, but newspaper men and church leaders and others are in our group. But we decided that there are problems that are peculiar to the region, and that the leaders in the region might make a contribution to the nation by regarding these problems in a rather homogeneous society as something to tackle, and then later we would expect to see the nation profit by what we come up with.
What are some of these problems that are peculiar to the Southern region?
I might say that in our brief statement, and we're almost a year old, we've tried to work at first rather inconspicuously. We said that, to use the language in our official statement, we hope to draw upon the South's moral and intellectual resources to make our political society more ethical, more dynamic, and more just. We urge our fellow Southerners to reflect the South's nobler side in its political life. Now, Mr. Shields, getting down to specifics, you see, we would favor on that basis full participation in the political process by racial minorities, particularly the Negro minority, but also including, of course, the Spanish-speaking minorities in certain parts of the South and other minorities. We would favor voter education and certainly dignifying the profession of politics, establishing a climate for free discussion of public issues. And on that basis, stating it negatively, we oppose racism, we oppose voter apathy, we oppose improper electoral procedures such as the inordinate use of money in political campaigns. There are many other things that could go into that inventory.
Is SCOPE a long-term outfit or a kind of Stop Wallace effort?
I don't think we know the answer to that. Well, we certainly were not produced by any limited desire just to stop one man. We have lately developed some very strong convictions regarding his methods of campaigning, but it's far broader than that. And whether we become a permanent organization or not, we're certainly going to exist after November 5th. And it was not created just to oppose the candidacy of George Wallace.
Congressman, is re-election a kind of bribery in votes instead of money for the politician who does just what the public wants, whether it's right or wrong?
No, I think that that would be too much on the cynical side. And, of course, when we talk of political ethics, from the standpoint of the office holder, we're dealing with a very difficult and complicated problem. And as one whose whole life, you might say, has been given to political activity, I have a certain reticence in speaking of it because I don't want to appear, you know, as a self-righteous person. And the people don't like piety in politics. And when I say piety, I'm not using it in the old sense of a dedicated religious life. But many men wrap the cloak of religion around them, and I think that in political campaigning, this is an ignoble thing. But I do believe that more men are moved by high ideals in public service in the political arena than are credited with having that concept of responsibility to the public.
But are they not more concerned about what the wishes are of their constituents in order to remain in office?
Far too often. And in talking to my students, and in later years since my defeat for Congress for a ninth term, and after I left the White House, because for a little while after my defeat, I continued in the public service. President Eisenhower appointed me to the Tennessee Valley Authority, and then Mr. Kennedy asked me to become a part of his White House organization. But after that, I did go into classroom work. I've been teaching at Wake Forest University, at Rutgers University, and at University of Massachusetts. I've tried to instill into the minds of young people who will hear me the what we might call the Burke philosophy. Edmund Burke had something to say about that. He said a representative, and you might apply this to office holders generally, owes the people not his energy alone, but his judgment as well, and he betrays them if he yields his judgment to their opinion. And I think that there have been many demonstrations of an adherence to this idea. I don't think that as large a number of men in public office realize what a demanding thing this is, and often what it involves in the way of personal sacrifice, but certainly the profession of politics is not alone in this. Many other professions at times thrust men into situations where they have to think of honor and responsibility and duty above personal preferment. But I can understand why you asked that question, and I could speak at some length on it. I mustn't speak any longer at this moment.
Congressman, much of the political rhetoric we hear by the politicians in the area of what they will do if elected is of interest to us, especially in the case of the presidential candidates. How much of a change can the electorate really expect when treaties have been signed, when defense contracts have been let calling for millions of dollars, and where career officers head up most of the departments in Washington? What kind of changes can the voter expect?
Undoubtedly, in our kind of government, personal leadership is an important factor. A dynamic, powerful, strong-willed person can influence policy. And at the same time, I think I would have to place that in a secondary position. Undoubtedly, events and educational influences and powerful thought habits of people are more important. They make an impact upon policy and upon political institutions that really cannot be canceled out by even the most powerful individual in a place of great political power. But I would not want to discount the importance of applying some criteria, some sound criteria, to the claims of candidates even for the presidency of the United States, I think, or any other office. But I think I understand the implications of your question. I agree that the way really to tackle these tough problems is to begin with the broad base of popular education, acquaint the people with the moral and ethical implications, and then work policy out in that direction.
Congressman, we'll begin taking some calls from our night call listeners, and just before we do, I'd just like to throw one more question at you during this particular segment. Does the public want honest politicians? You stood by your conviction in Arkansas, and you were not elected. And we interpret your willingness to stand up for what you felt was right as a man who was honest. Now, does the public want honest politicians? And what is your reply to that?
I don't know that too much should be made of that particular crisis, but let me say this. Here, I think perhaps to give it some content and some force, I think what I said to a group not long ago about it, where the chairman had done as you have just done, perhaps paying too much of a compliment to me, I said that I had not always been brave. I had retreated at times and conceded. I was never sure how much I should concede. Every politician knows the art of compromise if he's in office very long or in politics for any length of time. But I'll put it like this, if it doesn't sound too heroic, it's a very sincere statement, that if my defeat in the Little Rock crisis, when I did adhere rigidly to the idea that court orders must be obeyed, that the desegregation rules promulgated by the courts and by the school board there, regardless of popular favor, that if my my course of action in that situation atoned for any previous weaknesses, that I was one of the happiest politicians on the face of the earth.
Congressman, we'll take our first call tonight from New Concord, Ohio. Mr. David Mount is calling in from WMCO. Mr. Mount?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, sir. Thank you for calling.
Mr. Shields.
Fine, thank you.
Congressman.
Yes?
I would like to ask you, why did you enter politics?
Beg your pardon?
Why did you enter politics?
Well, I guess I was sort of born to it. I grew up in a little county seat town. Father was interested in political life, and I'd go to country picnics with him and go to the courthouse meetings, and I heard political orations, and I... then added to that is this other rather, idealistic element. I was exposed to some of the poverty problems in the rural sections of my state, and because of the inconveniences suffered by my family growing out of rural poverty, I think I thought that I could maybe help make their lot in life a little better. I think, again, that was... And it enters into the thinking of a lot of people who are exposed to poverty. And politics offers an opportunity to correct injustices and maladjustments in economic life. That had a lot to do with it.
Do you feel that this has been done now as a result?
That I have done some good?
Yes. Do you think that definite results have been made?
Yes. I think that I attached myself to some forces in life and helped maybe I helped propel them a little more rapidly. Maybe I did some good. At any rate, I've encouraged young people to think in these terms and to see politics as a very challenging and honorable profession. One of the great problems in America is to dignify the profession of politics, to get away from this idea that it's dirty business. Well, of course it has its very morbid side, and that shocks us, but it needn't be a dishonorable business. It can be a very honorable profession.
Mr. Yes. Mount, thank you so much for calling.
Okay, thank you, Bill.
Well, that
thank
was
you.
A good question.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Our guest tonight is former Congressman Brooks Hayes. We are discussing politics and honesty. We'll return to our guest right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest former Congressman Brooks Hayes after station identification. Night Call welcomes your comments about this nationwide listener call-in program. Your opinions and reactions are of value to the producers of Night Call in their continuing attempt to initiate and stimulate dialogue between the black man in the street and his white counterpart. Please address your comments to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. The producers of Night Call attempt to balance the points of view presented on this series about controversial issues. In keeping with this traditional concern for free expression on controversial matters, Night Call invites requests for equal time from responsible representatives on opposing points of view if it's thought they have not been adequately represented on the air. Such requests should be addressed to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself. Collect from anywhere in the country to Brooks Hayes about politics and honesty. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Dell Shields.
And we return to Night Call and our guest calling in from Atlanta, former Congressman Brooks Hayes. And we'll go this time, well, right here in the New York area. Miss DePlater is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. Miss DePlater, good evening.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Shields. Thank you. Congressman?
Yes?
I would like to ask you, what type of honor system does the Congress work on? I ask this because I recently read a column in the Post. As a matter of fact, it was last week. And I'll quote from it. It says, the chief mate, a money raiser for the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, Representative Bob Wilson of San Diego, was caught red-handedly recently in the worst type of cheating. He got his name recorded as present and voting in the House of Representatives when actually he was back in Southern California. Now, I would like to know first, how is it possible that, I don't know if you were present at when this happened, but I would like to know, how was it possible that someone answered for him or however it happened and he was recorded as being present? And secondly, I'd like to know, why is it that this never hit the papers? The only reason I heard about it is because it was in this one column, Drew Pearson's column in the Post. But the papers never, I didn't see it, at least in the Times or any other paper, even noting the fact that it had happened. And I'd like to know, why is it that this didn't hit the papers?
Yes. Well, first, let me speak to the question without involving the individual congressman whose name was mentioned, because it would not be fair to him. I know nothing whatever about the facts, except I do know that on occasion mistakes are made. Now, in this particular instance, and when I say mistakes, when you're calling a roll of 435 names and it's a voice response, it does happen occasionally that there is a mix-up. They're generally corrected the next day.
Well, right here it says he answered 8 out of 13 roll calls.
Yes.
Now, that to me is more than an incident.
Well, that could be, and I don't want to prejudge that at all. I mean, and without condemning or defending him, just let me say this in abstract terms. The House should improve its procedures. And in line with that, that awareness of so many members that this could happen and conceivably did happen, I mean, things like this, they set up an ethics committee, and that committee has been working out standards of conduct. It certainly wouldn't be necessary to say that it's dishonorable to arrange with the clerk to be recorded in a certain way or to have someone respond for you. It doesn't need to be asserted. We know that that's dishonorable conduct. And the ethics committee, finding from the facts that such a thing happened, would certainly take some action. I don't know what kind of action they'd take, but the ethics committee, appointed by the speaker on a bipartisan basis, 6 members from the Democratic side and 6 from the Republican side, so that you don't make it a political matter, is going into these matters. And I anticipate, if any basis at all for charges of this kind if the basis for it is established, then the committee will have a full-scale investigation. We've finally gotten this committee set up in a way that assures the public that that responsibility for irregularities will be determined.
Well, he also says here that the chief clerk was relieved of his duties. Now, that's saying that he was responsible, even though it was unlikely that it was his fault. Now, why is it that the blame was shifted? Not only that, I'd also like to know, according to this column, it says that this is a greater fault due to the fact that they compared it to Adam Clayton Powell's incident.
Yes. Well, I doubt that it's a common practice. I'm not saying that that this doesn't occur at times, but I certainly would assume that the committee would not condemn the clerk until there was a full-scale investigation. That any action of suspense of an official would probably be temporary, just as an official is removed from office when there's an indictment, but he isn't permanently removed until there is a conviction. So there are important rights of the individual who is accused to be considered, too. That it would be unethical to condemn them merely because there is an appearance of irregularity.
Well, Mr. Plater,
the answer for your question is that the House is finally taking notice of this problem.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is NyCorp in New York. Our guest tonight, former Congressman Brooks Hayes. And tonight we're discussing politics and honesty. And right after midnight tonight, we'll be welcoming another guest, Senator Tom Radney from Alabama, who will be calling in. Congressman, we were the former caller, Mr. Plater, mentioned Mr. Powell. Now, we watched this past year, two members of Congress brought up on charges, Senator Dodd of Connecticut and Congressman Powell of New York. In your opinion, did the punishment fit the crime in both cases, or was there a double standard exercised?
Well, I'm sure that in the short time I would have to comment upon that question, and in view of the complexities, and in an effort not to do damage to the reputation of anyone, I should say that I think, well, I will speak to the point to this extent. If I had been a member of the House, I'm confident I would have voted with the recommendation of the committee presided over by Congressman Seller of New York, because it appeared that they had gone exhaustively into the facts, and they thought that the kind of rebuke for irregularities that they recommended, that this was commensurate, and that should have been done. I probably would have agreed with the committee. But I feel that granting that it's possible that the punishment was too extreme in both cases, granting that that's possible, nevertheless, the public is entitled to have these monitoring committees set up by House and Senate. And it seemed to me, regardless of one's individual opinion about it, that the Senate was to be commended from trying to balance these two interests, that is, justice for the individual, but complete fidelity to the public demand for an honorable performance.
Congressman, a lot of young people seem interested in more honesty in politics. What does Scope have for them?
We are of the opinion, and I've just come out of a meeting with such men as former Congressman Carl Elliott of Alabama, Hugh Patterson, publisher of the Arkansas Gazette, Marsh Grant, publisher of the Biblical Recorder, men of that kind. We're of the opinion that we could put our energies to no more fruitful purpose than to acquaint young people with the ethical demands of the political profession. A lot of college students these days are somewhat disconsolate about politics, and I would like to move into that vacuum, to give them an ideal to pursue, and to give them hope that progress can be made, and to give them some specific things to do, such as carrying out the mandates of the national conventions for a more democratic method of selecting delegates at the local level. We're not going to have a true democracy until we get people, until we give people the right to choose their delegates to the national conventions in a good, sound, procedural way. Then young people won't. want to feel that the political powers are responsive to their interests and their ideals and their standards. There are among them, of course, the extremists, the irresponsible ones that I call the destroyers. But they're a very small minority, and it's the other group, the sort of confused group that are entitled to hope and encouragement. We're ready to give a lot of attention now to the campus life of the South and to encourage these young people to move out of campus life as they emerge with their degrees to do something about the bad practices and the sordid politics in their community.
We'll take another call from New York, Congressman. This time, Mr. Lewis is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. Mr. Lewis, good evening, sir.
Good evening, Dell.
How are you?
All right. Congressman Hayes, may I say, sir, that I have quite a bit of respect for your background and particularly your political knowledge. But it's one thing that, that's been on my mind for quite some time, and you mentioned it earlier when you mentioned Edmund Burke. You mentioned it earlier when you mentioned Edmund Burke.
Oh, yes.
And I would like to add another name to it. He's not very well known. He hasn't written very much. He didn't get a chance during the French Revolution, and that was a man named Turgot.
Yes.
And Turgot was the kind of a man who was, as I remember the description, he was a very forceful, very powerful individual, such as you described.
Yes.
And he stood before Rousseau, and he told him, he says, sir, may I warn you that, if I can paraphrase his statement correctly, that no sooner than my head is chopped off, you will soon join me on the chopping block. And sure enough, for something
yes.
like, I think it was a year or so,
yes.
Rousseau joined him on the chopping block, sure enough.
Yes.
Now, the statement that I'm getting, that the thing that I'm getting at now is I think that primarily, I think the majority of our politicians have, to put it in plain English, have just lost their nerve.
Well,
I think that they were unnerved. I think they were unnerved by perhaps the assassinations that we've experienced in
yes.
the past, and as a result, they're afraid to stand up for any particular issue. Now, I'm not concerned with morals here. I'm concerned with logic.
Yes.
Basically, whatever your political persuasion, you would be more concerned with maintaining some sort of peace and security throughout the nation.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Some sort of peace and security throughout the nation.
Yes.
Now, as long as one citizen, any citizen, no matter what his color is in danger of his life for a lack of observation of constitutionality by the city officials or by
yes.
by the government, that means we're all, no matter what color he is, or no matter what his station in life, we're all in danger.
I couldn't agree more. And that's the reason we have to be on guard against the distortion of the usual democratic procedures when the public is inclined through their fear of crime and of irresponsible action in the streets, as they're termed, the public's inclined to turn to a person who advocates, who has short answers for every problem. The so-called tough guy that wants to deal solely in terms of police strength instead of an understanding, a sympathetic understanding of the roots of problems. And we don't want a dictatorship in America.
Yes, sir.
I hope I'm speaking to your point, because I feel very strongly about that. And Hitler rose to power because he exploited the fears of people. And the first thing you knew, he had a majority of the people. He came to power without a majority, but he fanned these feelings of hatred. And this is something we must be on guard against in the United States. Just the mere fact that a majority of the people might respond, and therefore he could pretend that he had the will of the people, that is, he was following the will of the people, that isn't sufficient in the democratic system. The minority has certain rights that are just as precious as the right of the majority to select their ruler or their official. And that's the reason, if I might go back to your French situation, you mentioned the noble position, the fine, heroic person like Burke. I'm not familiar with his career, but Robespierre, in that same period, you remember he had a cynical view. He said, "The crowd is in the street. I must find which way they're going, for I am their leader."
Yes.
And that too often happens. Now, the business of the politician should not only be to respond where the will of the
people is correct and sound, but the public official has the duty of molding opinion, of giving the people information. As one of my friends says, he must be a window rather than a mirror.
Congressman and Mr. Lewis, I'm going to have to break in for station identification. Mr. Thank Lewis, you. Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest former Congressman Brooks Hayes after station identification. Next week on Night Call, a black entrepreneur, a white consumer expert, a pro-Arab Jew, the Indian wife of a U.S. senator, and Godfrey Cambridge. Monday, Dr. Thomas Matthews of NEGRO, the National Economic Growth and Reconstruction Organization. Tuesday, Presidential Consumer Advisor Betty Furness. Wednesday, Middle East expert Alfred Lilienthal. Thursday, Mrs. Fred Harris, a full-blooded Comanche Indian, wife of the Oklahoma senator. And Friday, comedian Godfrey Cambridge. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Brooks Hayes about politics and honesty. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Dal Shields.
And welcome to the Night Call stations who join us for the second half hour. And earlier, we were very happy to welcome five new stations to our Night Call network. KUOP-FM in Stockton, California, WGY in Schenectady, New York, WMCO-FM in New Concord, Ohio. And we had a caller in tonight from that station, and WCSU-FM in Wilberforce, Ohio, and WOIC in Columbia, South Carolina. And, of course, a welcome once again to those stations. We have a special call-in guest, and we'll go to him, Mr. Tom Radney, in Alexandria, Alabama. Mr. Radney has just resigned from the Alabama State Senate. He openly supported Senator Ted Kennedy at the Democratic National Convention, and shortly afterward, Mr. Radney's wife and three daughters were threatened. So we'll welcome Mr. Radney. Mr. Radney, good evening, sir.
Hello, Mr. Shields.
And thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Congressman Hayes is on the line, so he can hear our conversation, and we can join in. But first, I'd like to ask you, does a politician dare be honest to his convictions?
Well, Mr. Shields, first, because it's a real privilege for me to be on here with former Congressman Hayes. He has a great reputation in my area among people like me. The word honesty, of course, includes many thinkings. So I'm not ready to admit it all. I just heard the congressman laugh at the people who go into politics are dishonest, if we speak from the money angle. The ones I've been associated in state government, and of course my participation has been in the state senate of Alabama, I found most of them to be, I think, honest as far as the dollar is concerned, as far as their votes are concerned. Of course, the real question that confronted me is whether or not you can speak with a minority voice, and when you think that you have that right to do so, recognize this minority voice, but feeling that you have that right, if it's responsible, and I have tried to speak responsibly. I tried to in Chicago as a delegate from Alabama, an elected delegate, by the way. We run for delegate positions to the Democratic Convention. And I thought that I could do this without the real fear of any personal abuse to myself, to my wife and children. I found this was not true, that I could not do that. And, of course, this is one reason I have decided to bow out of politics. Open yourself, of course, to the criticism. Well, what Harry Truman say, the heat in the kitchen's too hot, you should can't stand it. I can stand the political heat, but there comes a point, I think, that a politician has to make a decision, perhaps, between years of fighting. I'm a youngster, but I've spent many years fighting in this area, and what he thinks is a safe to his family.
Congressman Hayes?
Well, Mr. Radney, I can certainly sympathize with you. My situation was somewhat like yours. I'm out of office not because I resigned, but because in
moments of fear and, I think, a degree of hysteria that was not typical of my district. They're good people. They just decided I didn't reflect their views on the race question. Before they did that, there was such violence in our community practiced by a minority, a very small minority of violent-minded people, that I felt a bit insecure for myself and my family. I know that the United States Marshal felt alarmed to the point of giving me a bodyguard for a week. And these things, of course, do create misgivings among us. So I'm thoroughly sympathetic in your case. And here's where our faith is really tested. I could never reach a decision myself on whether you made the right decision or not. I mean, that is something that...
That's something only the person himself can decide, Congressman.
That's it exactly. And we would all agree that that's in your own mind and heart to decide. I would hope that you would agree with me that though Alabama has been just torn apart almost by the race problem, as the parts of my state are, and I have a warm feeling for Alabama. I know it's good side, and I know it's going to come out of the...
Well, we have many pluses in Alabama, Congressman, and we feel a kinship to Arkansas,
yes.
Of course. Of course, there are two ways, I think, that a person that, like me, my wife and I are strong members of the Methodist Church. We
yes.
believe in Jesus Christ without apology. And we feel that we can be a voice for the state of Alabama, as we intend to do, without being a candidate, and
yes.
probably a more effective voice. I have tried over the years, and since in the Senate, I have been sort of a spokesman of the young people of our state. And in the next 2 weeks, I'm speaking on about three college campuses on Alabama politics, 1968, and
uh-huh.
the right of a responsible minority voice. So I'm not about to withdraw from politics, but withdrawing as a candidate sometimes
yeah.
releases that pressure that those that want to get you out, of course, do, and I shall continue to participate in that
good.
Area.
Now, that's good news.
Well, Mr. Radney, yeah. do we interpret your resignation as a protest vote, more or less?
No, my resignation was just what I said it was, Mr. Shields. That is, those people that were threatened and actually did the overt acts to carry out their threats, I felt that it was necessary for me to say, well, look here, Tom Radney will step out. He won't run against you, as it was predicted that I would in 2 years from now for Lieutenant Governor. And I think I had decided perhaps to run for Lieutenant Governor 2 years from now. But for me to say, I won't run, now you can leave me alone, I did what I thought it would do. They left me alone. Now, this doesn't mean that I won't speak, and that doesn't bother for me to speak. I've always spoken on these issues, and they've known where I stood.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that whether I could have won or not would be another situation. But I think that I would have perhaps, in an honest sort of way, made the issues very clear to our people 2 years from now. And what I call it is that is talk sense to the American people, the Alabama people, as Ellis Stevenson said. I think I had that responsibility, and I've been doing that fairly well, and it wasn't too popular in many areas.
Well, I think this is very relevant, and what you've had to say is enlightening. You would agree with me that often when there is an illness in the society that is focused in one community, it's up to the people of that entire state to seal that off and to create such an atmosphere of goodwill. Well, in this case, let's say between the races, because there should be no racial hatred under modern conditions. And we've got a great opportunity now to admit the Negro to full participation in political life, and we need to stand up for his right to vote and to hold office, to participate, in other words, and to equal treatment. We need to stand up for that and to say that the South's best interests lie in this direction, and that decent, ethical people must be on this side and demand of our political leaders the right to voice these views.
Congressman, I don't think there's any question about that. Of course, part of my senatorial district is Tuskegee Institute.
Yes.
I have represented the Negro community of my district. I have felt, as I said in the legislature, for God's sake, let's approach these issues on some basis other than race for
right.
a change. And, I mean, this race thing cuts both ways. I
yes.
said to the Negro community, I said, we can't approach it just on the racial thing from your side, as we can't from ours. But
yes.
I've tried to approach it on what is best for the state of Alabama. And,
yes.
better for the nation is I say I'm an American first, an Alabamian second. This gets to be sort of unpopular sometimes, but I really think it's deeper than that, Congressman. I agree with you, but I think it's deeper to this extent. In Alabama, of course, our greatest battle is with the federal government. Every everything federal is bad. Of course, we get back about $2 every dollar we send to Washington in this state, but our people can't understand that. I try to tell them this, but there's a real gap between the people in Alabama and what we consider Washington. It's really their enemy, and of course, some of us as politicians have sold them that bill of goods, and I think this is a very dangerous thing.
It certainly is, and I'm afraid there's been a bit of demagoguery in that hue and cry about the evil of Washington. Government is our government.
That's what I try to say. Exactly. You know, down here, the federal court system is thought of, it perhaps is hated more than any, maybe HEW is hated a little worse, but those two together, and of course our people in the street have bought this, and for example, one of the justices of the Supreme Court is from a little town, Hugo Black, just about 10 miles from where I live.
Yes.
It's really difficult for me to think that a man that grew up in the soil, as I did here in this area of Alabama, is anything except a dedicated American, and of course I think he is.
Congressman and Senator Radney, there's a question I'd like to address to both of you, and it kind of disturbs me because you don't seem to give me much hope. If Congressman Hayes was not reelected because he decided to stand up for his convictions, and if Senator Radney decided to step down because of threats, I wonder what are you actually going to say to the young people who are interested in getting into politics?
Well, Senator, you speak to it first, and then I have a comment.
I will speak to this, and of course this is a burning question in my mind in making the decision to withdraw, Mr. Shields, and this was the most difficult one, because I said to these young people, there's hope tomorrow, the sun is really rising, and we've got an opportunity here. I said to them, because I'm an Alabama, and this family's been here 160 years, and I keep saying, we're the ones who've got to change it. We can't expect someone from outside to come in and change it for us and to make these steps in the right direction. So then they say to me, look here, Senator, you're stepping aside. Why should we come back to Alabama? Why should we finish college and come back here? Because this is a difficult question. Well, I answer them this way, and I answer you this way, Mr. Shields, that I'm not the only person that has walked this little path that I have walked. It's going to be a little easier for the next one to do. And I don't know, of course I said that maybe we didn't have the courage to stay, when I say we, my wife and children and me. But I do think that we have inspired some youngsters in this state to say, well, we'll pick up where Tom Radney left off. And there have been some people that I picked up from that left off. This is the only way that I can tell them. And I say that after 1968 is over, the odds are maybe 69 and 70 are not going to be quite as bad, and some of the issues are not going to be as same. The Vietnam War maybe is going to get over, and some of these sort of things. That's the only answer I can give. It's not a good answer, but it's the best answer I have.
Well, I think that has to be put alongside the perfectly valid claim for our profession that one can never be sure that an honorable course will pay off. Now, here's where you reach the philosophical and even the theological considerations. And incidentally, just as the senator stated, there are some relevant comments to be made on the side of religious and spiritual values related to political life. They shouldn't be used in a political campaign to exploit those strong and deep feelings of religious devotion. But the people of the United States need to ponder this question. You're not going to have the kind of system that really in their hearts they want until you tap these resources. So I would lay alongside this idea that a better day is going to dawn. I would say, but if it doesn't dawn for individual politicians so that their efforts are always rewarded with office and with honors and success, what of it?
That's so unimportant anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So I have said this to them. Here's my little preachment, that you should never equate success with the ability to get more votes than some other person in a particular election. Some of my most gratifying experiences in politics have been in the races that I lost, and often the man who honestly promotes an idea that in time will prevail, or even a valid idea worth discussing, he's rendering as big a service as the man that has learned how to win an office regardless of the price that he's paying for it. Now, this isn't sheer idealism. Of course, I finally won an office, and I held it for 16 years. They were very wonderful years, and I think I did some good. But I ran four times for office before I was ever elected to anything. And I think as society examines this problem of service, even at sacrifice by individuals, they'll find a way to make the rewards commensurate. And
Senator Radney. Senator Radney.
If I may, just one other thing, because I think this brings out what the congressman said. It was a great consolation to my wife and me, I think it always will be, that a freshman senator from Alexander City, Alabama, a little town of 15,000 people, could stand in Chicago with, a responsible voice, and to say, without fear of getting the feedback home, which I think that I knew this was not going to be popular, but to say what I really believe, and that is, I liked John Kennedy. I thought he was a great president. I think that Teddy Kennedy would have made a great president. And I said this, and I think I used good grammar, and I think I spoke from the heart of Dixie, that realizing that the people in Alabama didn't completely agree with me, but yet that I could say this to the American people. And this in itself was an accomplishment, because it's been a heck of a long time since someone from the heart of Dixie has even said he was a Democrat. And I'm a Democrat without apology. And I think that there's some progress.
Senator Radney, thank you so much for being our special calling guest tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
This is Night Call in New York. Our special calling guest, Senator Tom Radney from Alexander City, Alabama. And, of course, our guest tonight is former Congressman Brooks Hayes. We'll return to the congressman right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest, former Congressman Brooks Hayes, after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, folk singer, nonviolent protester Joan Baez on her music and her protest. Listen to something from her new book, Daybreak. It's addressed to all of us. Only you and I can help the sun rise each coming morning. If we don't, it may drench itself out in sorrow. You, special, miraculous, unrepeatable, fragile, fearful, tender, lost, sparkling, ruby, emerald, jewel, rainbow, splendor person, it's up to you. Would it embarrass you very much if I were to tell you that I love you? Joan Baez, Music and Nonviolence, on her non-turned-on, fully conscious love affair with a fouled-up world, tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in the country to Brooks Hayes about politics and honesty. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, former Congressman Brooks Hayes, and this time we'll go out to Detroit, Michigan. Mrs. Montgomery is hearing Night Call over WJLB. Mrs. Montgomery, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for being with us.
Yes, I'm kind of stunned tonight because I think Mr. Radney, I used to teach in Alexander City.
Oh.
Kind of rural section there, but just a mile or two out from Alexander City, and I think maybe my spirit has changed to know that after so many years and when I was teaching there how we were deprived of so many things, but I feel quite encouraged tonight.
You think a change is coming?
Oh, the changes. I've been in Detroit for 20 years, but I go home every 12 months, and I can see the improvement. But I'd like to say, when you say politics and honesty, I think the two should be separated in a sense, because having worked with our very fine congressmen here, I think they're doing a good job. I'm sure, I guess I can call names.
Certainly.
Congressman Diggs and John Conyers and some other congressmen, I think, are doing good jobs, and I feel that along the line, many of them promise things, and some of them are really trying to do the things they promise and trying to be as honest. But on the other hand, I cannot understand how people can invade communities and promise this and promise that, and they appear to be so honest until when election comes, you see them and don't see them again. I mean, when it comes to really the real problem. Now, anybody, when we call the name of Detroit, we just don't have to say another word from this past June a year ago, because we had it. And I feel that the things that some of the congressmen promised us before they were elected, this would have been the time that they could have come together and combined their efforts a little more. Now, I don't say say that they're not trying, but I feel that when it comes to honesty and politics, the two of them, I just think that they'll just be separated.
Well, I think the Congressman Hayes, and I know he can speak for himself, but I'd just like to inject this. I think we were talking about the possibility or the probability of compromise as opposed to actual or out-and-out dishonesty.
Yes.
Perhaps our question should be, how much compromising can or should an elected official undergo?
Can I speak to that?
Yes, sir.
And I think, and who is it in Detroit?
Mrs. Montgomery.
Mrs. Montgomery.
Yes.
Well, I'm glad to have her on the line. Well, Ms. Montgomery, I think in this matter of compromise, I may not be speaking to the point too directly, but it's something I don't want to close out without saying. I think you have to distinguish between the kind of issue that you have. Now, in Little Rock, here was a matter of nine little Negro students, the minority group. They'd been ordered by the court to be admitted to a school. That was their right, and that was basic.
Sure.
And that was an issue on which I was willing to submit my candidacy. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't particularly care about where the new post office is to be located. I wouldn't feel too apologetic if I yielded my opinion on that because of some pressures or maybe, well, I could think of other issues that are secondary.
Sure.
You're entitled to distinguish in these decisions you make between the important and basic issues and those that are secondary.
That's right.
I think the great problem from the standpoint of the conditions that you as an Alabaman, former Alabaman, and I as an Arkansasian, that we're dealing with, I think the hope is in our young people as we send more well-equipped young people with high moral character and intellectual equipment. I would stress the intellectual equipment because I'm not bringing a general indictment against all politicians today as having moral weaknesses, but there's great hope, and there's great hope for us as we stir up interest. The number of people registering to vote in the South is inspiring, and of course, we're not the only country that's had this problem of voter apathy. I think of what the dear little lady in England said. Someone asked her if she voted. She said, "Vote? Oh, I never vote. It only encourages them." And we have that that problem. Now, in my case, you had intense feeling that I think maybe vanished a few hours after they got my scalp, the particular group of politicians that were out to unseat me. I think there was a change of mood, and that often happens. That's a part of the human phenomenon that we have to deal with in politics. One lady living down the street said to her neighbor when she read of my defeat, she said, "Oh my, if I'd known Brooks was in any trouble, I wouldn't have voted against him."
Oh, yeah.
It's that human...
Well, Congressman, the people, do the people expect too much from their congressmen or from the elected officials?
Yes, I'm afraid they do, and always overlooking the fact that many of these decisions are really, in the final analysis, dictated by their composite judgment. And turning to literature again, you remember in one of Shakespeare's plays, he said, "The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves, that we are underlings." We have to face all of these problems with a sense of humility. That's the reason I don't have much time for the candidate who has all the answers and who gives a simplistic response to these very complicated, difficult problems.
But may I insert this, that I feel that sometimes we do maybe go too far expecting maybe too much from the congressmen, but I say this, that I think maybe there are times when our congressmen could make themselves maybe more available there. You have people, I worked here in Detroit with a new Detroit committee. I've been teaching, but now we're working to try to bring about more peace in the community, and our congressmen are working, but I feel that somewhere along the line that they can make themselves available to the people who just don't know them.
That's right. Do I have time for another little quick footnote on that, Mr.
If you will hold, sir, because I have to do a wrap-up, and then we'll get right back to you. All right? Mrs. Montgomery, thank you so much for calling.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. We've reached that point in our show where, as we say night after night, it's always a sad point for us because we wish we could be with you for hours and hours. But there does come a time in this particular show when we have to cut off our phone calls. And, of course, we always extend an invitation to our night call listeners to drop us a note. And if you'd like to send a note to former Congressman Brooks Hayes or to any of the other guests whom you've heard on the night call show, remember, you are free to do so. Just drop your note to Night Call in Pomona, New York, and we'll take care of business for you. Congressman?
Yes?
Yes, we have just about a minute.
Yes.
And you may insert that...
No, I think I've said all that I should say. I'll respond to anything that you say if there's 60 seconds left.
Well, I was just very curious about what's going on in the present presidential elections, or presidential campaign, I should say.
Well, let me speak quickly to that point, then.
All right. Well, my question first is that we hear one candidate saying that if he's elected, that he's going to settle the Vietnamese war. And some weeks ago, we had a congressman on who said that even if the Vietnamese war was settled tomorrow, that we would still be in Vietnam for the next 10, maybe 20 years. And I think that this is the kind of promise that is being made to the American people that is very, very wrong, because I think we're giving people false hope.
That's right.
So there, I think we can talk about the honesty of a politician. What can a man say that he can hope to get a vote and at the same time be able to speak truth?
Well, he shouldn't go into a campaign for the presidency without a mature philosophy and a record that would enable the voter to weigh his words with his record. And promises should be very discreetly put forth in a campaign, and very honestly and honorably put forth. I'm more concerned about throwing the election into the House of Representatives than anything else, however.
Is that a possibility?
It certainly is.
How close?
I'm terribly concerned about it, because, you see, we've allowed our Electoral College machinery to become outmoded. And the plan that was devised at the time this particular feature of the Constitution was written is undemocratic. It would give the least populous state the same weight in the voting as the most populous state.
Congressman Hayes, we want to thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call. Thank you for being with us.
Yes, sir. Good night.
Good night. This is Del Shields in New York, and to our night call stations, there'll be a little night call business. We had difficulty with our closed circuit feed tonight. We will feed it again after we're off the air. We will feed our closed circuit tonight after we're off the air. This is Del Shields in New York. Thank you.
The first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, folk singer, nonviolent protester, Joan Baez. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.